Hello.
Hi.
Hi, it's lovely to have you with us.
It's lovely to be with you this evening.
We've got it's pouring with rain down where I am in North London. How is it where you are? It looks sunny.
It's blue sky and bright sunshine.
Must have something to do with your nice sunny temperament for sure. So, Lisa, this is the part where we just get to know the speaker really before the talk. So we've
Okay.
got about 10 minutes, and my favorite question so far has to be ask this speaker, what's your favorite animal and why?
What's my favorite? That's a lovely question. I have more than one favorite animal, so let me think of what's my absolute favorite animal. Oh, I have to say that I love kittens.
Okay, why?
Because they're so playful and they're so sweet and lovable and just adorable, and you can cuddle them and their little being, and they grow up to be cats, and I love cats.
Any particular type of cat that you like?
I love Persian cats and Siamese cats, and I actually my favorite cat that I ever had was a mixture between a Siamese and a Persian.
Oh wow. Okay. All
So
right.
she was rather lovely, and we were very, very fond of her, and she was very beautiful as well.
I can imagine. Wow. I was half expecting, as you grew up in Zimbabwe, for you to say a lion or something like that, but no.
No, strangely not. I remember when I went to America for the first time, the missionary friends I was with, who knew me in Africa, and now I was visiting them in America, were so amused with me because I was so excited. I wanted to see oh, that little animal that's got a stripe on it, tiny little animal. The name's gone from me.
Squirrels,
No, not a squirrel.
chipmunks.
Chipmunk. I wanted to see the chipmunks. And they laughed and they said, "You're from Africa and all you want to do is see a chipmunk." And I was so excited when they found a chipmunk out in the woods
That was the exotic animal. For us, it would be a
it
lion.
absolutely was. Yeah, I've seen lots of those.
Okay, so how are you enjoying the lockdown? Can I use that phrase? Enjoy it.
I am enjoying it very, very much. And I do think the Americans have a friendlier version. What is theirs? It's sheltering in place. That sounds much more friendly to me. I mean, I know where it comes from, but it sounds much more friendly than lockdown. But I'm actually enjoying it because I love the peace and the quiet and the stillness and the not having to be anywhere or do anything.
So you like being free from all the different deadlines that come up with life
Yes.
generally. Yeah, I can imagine. Yes, I can resonate with that. The reason I'm asking is because now that I just flipped through the news this afternoon very, very quickly, and they're now saying that we're getting to a point of frustration with this whole thing. People are generally getting to a point of frustration, but it's nice to see that you're still enjoying it. So
Yes, I do understand other people's frustration. I'm sort of in a lucky circumstance, but it's I can understand the frustration. Shopping for me is a little bit, having to time it and go and stand in the queue and be concerned that I mustn't pick up any virus while I'm in the shop or pass on any virus. So that's probably my biggest one. So I can imagine how it must be for many people.
Yeah, it must be. Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, I'm in a very lovely environment, so I'm very lucky, but yes, it makes a difference. It really does. So, Lisa, what are you doing right now that you're enjoying?
what am I doing? I'm working on all my little writing projects that I have, and I'm enjoying spending more time cooking. I'm not a great lover of cooking, but I'm spending more time because my daughter and I live together, but she's often away. She works away most of the time, but I now have her here constantly. So usually if she's away, she comes back for a while, and then I have to cook for her for a short while. I don't have to. I choose to cook for her for a short while. And then she goes away again, and then I just fend for myself. But now she's here. Mm-hmm. I've been taking extra care on making sure I prepare nice meals for her, which I've been enjoying too. So I have been enjoying taking on cooking more mindfully.
Okay. And I know that your background is in drama or theatre, and that in Zimbabwe and South Africa, primarily you worked with young people, and now with adults, you've worked at helping them tread the board. And you're the director. And to paraphrase very badly Shakespeare, that the world is a stage and we're all actors on it. What piece of advice would you give us right now so that we would shine? You've been doing that with young people to help them shine. So what's the bit of advice you would give us today in lockdown, in the circumstances we're having at the moment, but we could still shine? What would be your advice?
Let me take from the drama world. When I work with somebody on stage, I tell them to own the stage. When they are on the stage, I tell them everybody is looking at you, and it's your place and it's where you belong. So own that stage and let everybody know that it's where it belongs to you, and you take charge of it. So that's what I would say to all of us in lockdown, is own the stage of lockdown. Like it or not, it is the stage that we have. It is the stage where we have been put. So own it and make the most of it in whatever way that means in your circumstances.
Okay. Oh, that's really lovely. I'd never seen it like that. Thank you. And I'm getting a couple of comments are coming up saying, that's brilliant. I love it. So thank you. It's a really lovely bit of advice there. Now, the next question I have for you really is, what's the greatest challenge you've experienced on owning the stage? And what's the easiest way to overcome that challenge?
Wow, that's a good, I have to give that one some thought. The biggest challenge I've had to own my stage. I would think I'm going to go way back now to when my children were very small. And my husband and I split up. And I was living in, we were living in South Africa at the time. And we split up, and I moved with my two small children. They were, how old were they? They were 3 and 5 at the time. And I moved to Malawi, a country I'd never known, that was quite dangerous to live in. And it was the first time I was ever on my own. And I had two small children, and I was living on my own, responsible for the two small children. I was teaching in a school there. They were very wonderful to me, but it was, I found that very challenging, and I would be so nervous at night that I would hardly sleep. So to own my stage, eventually one night I got so fed up with myself for being jumpy at every noise that happened. And I had a little talk with myself, and I said, this is nonsense. You cannot continue life like this. So I said, you simply accept everything as it comes. If somebody breaks in, because there were a lot of break-ins, if somebody breaks into your house, you will deal with it. Now just go to sleep. And you know, I went to sleep.
And
and it never bothered me again. You know, I just went to sleep and thought I'm not going to be upset about that anymore. And when somebody broke our burglar bars, we had burglar bars on the window to break in, I dealt with it when it happened. And when it was over, it was over.
Mm.
So it's sort of taking charge of yourself and telling you there's nothing you can do. This is the stage you're standing on. Get on with it.
Mm.
And I found that actually worked wonders for me because I was never nervous again.
Mm. Okay, one last question for you then. Yeah. And it's still stage related, if that's okay. having had a quick chat with you and discovered this whole background, it really excited me. So I just thought, all right, this is the last question. What advice do you give then, young people, adults, in life when they get a curveball? Like when you're on the stage, unexpected things happen. At that point, how do you own the stage? How do you adapt? What's the best way of adapting at that moment?
Or to ad lib for a while.
Doesn't that throw everybody else off?
No. Well, of course it would, but everybody else has known that the curveball has been thrown.
Mm-hmm.
So you know on stage somebody has made a boo-boo, so something has not gone right, but the audience don't know that. So you never need to let the audience know, and somebody on stage will pick up the flack, as it were.
Okay.
Will pick up with what's missing and step into the breach. Uh-huh. So you step into the breach that cover up for somebody else, or you step into the breach that's been created for you, and you simply ad lib with total confidence, if that, as if that's the way it's supposed to be, and soon everybody is back on track again. Okay. And therefore so are you, because the biggest sin, I put it in inverted commas, the biggest sin is to let the audience know that there's been a mishap.
Mm. So how do you translate that into everyday life?
So that in everyday life, when something comes to you that you are not expecting, I can't think of an example offhand, but it comes at you. Mm-hmm. It's to accept that that's what's happened.
Mm.
If you can't change it, then just start living with it as though it was expected.
Hmm.
Just start living with it in the best way that you can, accepting that everything that comes your way is part of the drama.
Hmm.
You know, as we're on stage, let the audience think that that was written in the script. I just accept for myself, oops, wasn't expecting that, but it's written in the script, so therefore I must now start dealing with it.
Okay.
And just have the confidence to know that you can.
Mm. I was just thinking that it's a real quiet but very powerful confidence that exists and that we can tap into as individuals. It's a lovely way of looking at it and practicing.
And I think that if we all look back on our lives, we will find times when we actually did do that.
Mm. Mm.
Because it's in the end, there's nothing else we can do. We can give up and collapse, but you can't stay collapsed for very long.
No, not and live. Yeah.
So okay. I think it's what, like you say, it's a strength that we all have, and we tap into it like very quickly.
Mm. That's really lovely. Thank you, Lisa. I think we're now about to start the talk. So for those of you who are joining us, we've had a get to know the speaker from 6:20. We try and do that just in advance of the talk. So we're all here and ready to be part of an interesting evening and a very interesting hour. So Lisa is going to be speaking with us on the art of communicating effectively. A number of you were very kind and sent questions in advance, and we actually had the time this week to forward those questions on to the speaker, so hopefully they're going to get answered as she shares. Lisa is an educator and has been for most of her adult life. She has taught in Zimbabwe, in South Africa, in Malawi, and also within the UK now. And right now she continues to help young people, young adults, to prepare for the next stage of their life or the next big change, whether it's in the education field or moving on. So we're very lucky to have Lisa. And I'm going to hand over to Lisa. And please do send in your questions. The questions can come in on the question and answer button. And we'll be taking questions towards the end of the evening. So over to you, Lisa. Thank you.
Thank you, Arti. Thank you so much. All right, now we go off the topic of drama and owning our stage. But communicating effectively is similar to owning the stage. To communicate effectively means I know who I am. I know who I am communicating with. I know what I want to say. Now, in the drama scenario, we are very lucky in that we have memorized the words. So we know what to say. We know, we practiced, we know what to do. So we can just go for it. And we know what everybody else on the stage, how they're going to communicate back to us, because we've all practiced it. We've all memorized the words. Whew. But in just day-to-day ordinary communication, that is not the way. Other people don't react to my communication the way I want them to. They don't say what I want them to say. They don't react to me the way I want them to react. They don't understand me in the way I think that I have communicated. And what to me is the absolute marvel of human beings communicating is how well we do it in spite of the odds against us. So the odds against us communicating well are, we each come from a different perspective. We each have different ideas. We're seeing through different lenses. We're understanding from different points of view. We have different belief systems. And we see everything from completely different angles, yet we are trying to communicate and make sense to each other. And it simply often just falls apart and doesn't happen. And the fact that we do communicate as well as we do under all those setbacks, those what I see as enormous things that get in the way of our communication, the fact that we do communicate as well as we do shows just how magnificent we as human beings are, and just how wonderful is this art of communicating. Now let's just take a look at what is art to begin with. An art is something that I work on, that I study, that I learn how to do, and I learn how to make something beautiful, whatever the art is. And every art, we have a little bit of talent for it, or a lot of talent for it, or no talent for it at all, but usually there's a little bit of talent there because we choose to study it. But we have to study it, we have to work on it, we have to practice it until we make it into something beautiful. And the art of communicating is no different. We all have the talent for it because we all communicate all the time. Even people who have some disability that gets in the way of their communication, they find some way of communicating. They, in one way or another, are able to communicate. And so we all have the talent of communicating. Even animals can communicate. you can look, I said my favorite animal is a kitten, and I love cats, and I love the way cats communicate. So communication is something that we all have the ability to do. We all have the talent to do. Yet we sometimes botch it up an awful lot. But if we are looking at the art of communicating, the art of communicating means I need to study my communication. I need to work on it. And so in the short time we have together this evening, we are not going to delve to the depth of the art of communication. We're not going to make it and think, okay, I spent that hour on this evening, and now I'm a master communicator. No, because it's going to take a lot more work than that. But what I hope to cover tonight is ways that we can do that. How do I go about studying this art? What can I do to improve my communication? What work do I need to focus on in order to create something beautiful in my communication? And as we all know, we're in a very interesting time of the history of the world, when for the first time ever, I think the whole world is caught in the same little scenario, which is so very interesting. So we can look at this as being really interesting to take a look at. But the reality is for many that communication has been made more difficult. First of all, because there are some of us who may be alone, so there's no one to communicate with on a moment by moment basis in the house. And that's the benefit of that, is that it gives that person a chance to start looking at the communicating with myself part of communication, which is really important that we're going to cover quite extensively, because it's where the most work needs to be done, is communicating with myself. And I need to have silent time for that. I need to watch myself, but I also need to then practice what I'm working on in myself. So those of you who are alone, we know that you can phone and join in things like this to have a little bit of communication time. But it take this time to start studying your own communication with yourself, because my communication with other people is rooted in the communication I have with myself. Now, you all know how to have a conversation with yourself. We have that funny little joke that says, I like to talk to myself because then I get the answers I want, or I go to myself for advice because then I'll get the advice I want. So it's that working on communicating with myself and perfecting that. Then we have the scenario of other people who are maybe now closed in. I don't like to say closed in, because we can open the door and go to the garden if we have a garden. Not everybody has a garden. But I am now staying at home, probably with the people I love most in life, my family or housemates that I have. But suddenly we're having to communicate all the time. And that's a little bit difficult. And actually, communication with family can often be really difficult. Like we know the stories about going home for Christmas, and are you strong enough? How are you going to be, you know? And everybody's relieved on the after Christmas is over, and they can all go their own ways again. And that's not because we don't love each other in the family. But it's because the in the family, we have the most history. And we remember things. They were there when I was growing up, and they are the ones that have created the problems that I have. And I've created the problems for them. Or so we see it, because that's the way it appears. So we may be struggling with that, or struggling with housemates that we didn't really know that we are now having to live with. And the good news is that this is not going to last forever, but it's lasting for now. And if we can use this time now to practice this art. Now, one of the questions that was sent to me, thank you so much for the questions. I did take time going through them today and thinking, oh, am I going to be able to answer all of these questions? But the one of the questions I'm going to start with is, what are the core key principles of effective communication? I thought that was a rather powerful question. So I would say the bare bones of effective communication are mutual giving and receiving from the heart, expressing honestly, receiving with empathy. So the mutual giving and receiving from the heart is me expressing honestly with integrity, and me receiving with empathy from the other one. So it's a giving and a receiving. So what is it that how do I express honestly? And I get this from nonviolent communication. I don't know if any of you have the book on nonviolent communication. It's an excellent book if you want to really study communication, is to study this book. I'm not a great expert at it, but it's one that I delve into quite often Mitchell Rosen, I think his name is. It's a good book if you really want to study the subject in depth. But what I've got from the nonviolent communication, and another name for it is compassionate communication, which is what we are looking at here, is to give and receive from the heart, is to give and receive with compassion. And that's the mainstay of effective communication. So what I get from him is how I express honestly is, I clearly express how I am without blaming or criticism. So I express how I am without blaming or criticism. The moment that I give a blame, I mean, however I am, if I am not in a good place and I can express how I am not in my good place without blaming somebody else for the fact that I'm not, or criticizing somebody else because I'm not. And then the receiving with empathy is, I empathically receive how you are without hearing blame or criticism. And so I'm now going to read through the bare bones once again, and then talk a little bit more in depth about it, because it's very simple, but it's not easy. Simple is not always easy. It's simple, but simple makes it easier for me to work with it. And if I understand the simplicity of this and the power of this, I can work with it. So the bare bones of effective communication are mutual giving and receiving from the heart, expressing honestly, receiving with empathy. I clearly express how I am without blaming or criticizing. I emphatically receive how you are without hearing blame or criticism. Now, that second part, the listening part, the receiving part, there is huge generosity there. I suppose there's huge generosity in the other one as well. I express how I am without blaming anybody else. Now, I may be angry. And what normally happens is, I am angry because you did blah, 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 blah. But if I am communicating effectively, I won't put the blame there. I will take charge, responsibility of my anger, but without blaming the other person. Because if I am angry about what somebody else did, I am actually only I have actually only been triggered by the other person. The other person has not created the anger in me. The anger is in me. I had it there all the time. So it's my anger. And so when I express honestly, I take responsibility for what is in me. Yes, somebody has done something and it has triggered anger in me. So I can express, I am angry. And if I'm going to be honest, I don't blame myself for the anger. I know where it comes from. But I don't blame the other person, but I can say, I am angry because whatever it is the other person did. I am angry, but I own the anger. So I have huge generosity to myself and to the other in that I take the responsibility for it. So now the huge generosity that comes in my listening is that I listen to that other person without hearing blame or criticism. So now the other person is angry because of something that I did. So, and they will explode with anger to me. So now if I have empathy, because I know that I know that the anger belongs to them, but I'm not going to make the anger worse by saying, oh, the anger's got nothing to do with me, it's coming from you. That's not being having empathy in that moment. So to listen with empathy is to hear the anger in the other person and know that they are pointing it towards me. But in my generosity, I don't hear it as blame or criticism. I hear it as an emotion in the other people. Empathy is feeling the emotion of the other person, being with the other person in the emotion. So, as I say, it takes huge generosity, but it pays off dividends. Because the other person may be angry at something I did, but if I am generous with that person, and my answer would be something like, oh, I hear that you are very angry that I did this. Then I have acknowledged their anger. And they can go on and take it more. I could have flared back at them. And you know how arguments start. But if I am listening with empathy, I hear the emotion that the other person is feeling. And I accept that I was part of that. And I know that I was only a trigger because I've done the work with myself. So I understand that. And I can then work with the other person to somehow resolve whatever the situation is. So That's the bare bones of effective communication. And now there's a lovely little motto that we often use here, one of my favorite ones. And it fits with the bare bones of effective communication, because it's about giving and receiving. And the motto is, I give and take only happiness. So that's my choice. I choose to only give happiness. So I watch what I say. I am careful how I word things. I am honest. I have integrity. I say what needs to be said, but I say it without blame, criticism, guilt trips, all of those things that we often pour on people. I say it in a way that gives happiness, that's not going to give sorrow to somebody. And then in return, I take only happiness from what anybody gives me. So somebody in a fit of anger can accuse me of something and shout at me, but I choose not to be sorrowful about it. I choose happiness. So I love that. I give happiness and I take happiness. And that's my choice, but it needs to be worked on. As I say, it's one of my favorites, and I am quite good at it, but I'm not perfect at it. I have to admit that. It's still take some working to do. So that's the bare bones of communication. So now let's take a look. Let's take a look at some of the other questions to see how are we going to relate that into daily living. So there was another lovely one. It's quite a long one, but it has a very useful question at the end. I will read the whole question. In the corporate world, they talk about write down what you want to communicate, strip down all the emotion, and communicate the facts. Now, that's very important. So that's very valuable. That's very valuable. Now, the question is, what do you need to do in order not to get emotional? And to be honest and clear at the same time. So what do I do to not get emotional so that I can strip away the emotion and just get to the facts? And how can I be honest and clear at the same time? Because very often we think that honesty is when I express how angry I am, or how distressed I am, or how depressed I am, or how frustrated, or whatever the emotion in me is. We think, well, now that is honesty. But if I am expressing it, I need to do it more carefully and to be clear. So what I've got, how do we do that? So we first of all look at what the facts are, because there is something has happened. So we look at the facts. What is happening outside of me that has triggered something? And to strip away the emotion, I make no evaluation of it. I make no blame, no criticism. Blame and criticism will immediately come up, but I look outside and I look at what has happened. Without emotion. And it may take me time. I may have to sit quietly and feel the emotion and then look at, why am I feeling this emotion? Now, I've got a little example. Say I share an office space with somebody, and I come into the office space and I see that my pile of books that usually sit on a certain part of a shared desk are on the floor. And immediately that triggers in me anger. Why are my books sitting there? You are disrespecting me. My books are sitting on the floor. Why is that happening? I'm a great book lover, so I don't want my books to be sitting on the floor, and I don't want anybody else putting them on the floor. So my immediate reaction would be that they shouldn't be there. Somebody's disrespecting me and my books. And it's fine, but as long as I know that that is, I can sit quietly and say, okay, now the facts are, I walked into the shared office space and my books were on the floor. That's the fact. There's no emotion there. The books have no emotion. I tend to give my books emotion, but I also have to acknowledge they have no emotions whatsoever. So there's no emotion there. So there's no evaluation. So what do I do? Then I look at what's there inside me. What's outside me is a pile of books on the floor when I walk into the office space. Now I look at what's inside me. What am I feeling? What's the feeling I get when I see my books on the floor? Why has it turned to anger? And I name my feeling. I name my feeling. It's anger. And it's anger because I actually feel abused. I feel abused because they have taken my books and put them on the floor. And I relate myself to my books. And they're part of me. And so I feel abused. So now I know that actually, you know, it's not as serious as that. So now I've looked outside myself and got the bare facts. I've looked inside myself and I found the reason as far as I can concerning the burst of emotion I had around it. Then I look for what is missing. I only have an emotional outburst when something is missing. So what is missing is a need I have. What is the need that I have that has not been met? That is what is missing. Ah, I know what it is. I need a sense of order in this office space. And the person I share the office space with doesn't often have much order. Their things go other way. Just maybe that's what happens. And so my need is I need a sense of order. And then I could ask myself, how is this, will I get the sense of order? Okay. I think what would work for me is if my books could have a specific place, because maybe I leave them in piles in different places. Because I never seem to have only one book out. I always have a pile of them. So I see that. So then I can then, after I've looked at what's missing, and it's my need that is missing, I need a sense of order, I can then look to the other person, and now we can look for a resolution. Now, I'm the one that had the problem. So I look for what resolution would satisfy me. So I could say, okay, I was angry because I felt abused because I need a sense of order. And my books on the floor are not sense of order. So I've satisfied it all. I've covered all those steps that person was asking about. I can then say, how about it? Would you be willing to let a certain part of the desk be kept only for my books and maybe I will keep less books out? But if I can have a place that both you and I know that my books will always be, do you think that would work? And so then we can come to terms with it and hopefully resolve that. Because if I'm sharing an office space with somebody, it would probably be that we get on fairly well. So it may not always be as simple as that, but that gives us a process. The process is look at the facts, what is outside of me. Look at my feelings, which is inside of me. Look at what is missing. My need is missing. And state the need and then make a request of making a resolution to the problem. And then on the other hand, I can do this same on the receiving end. When I have triggered somebody, we can go through that same process where I will be listened to. I mean, and in the process, I would listen when I'm ready to. I will listen empathically to the person who shares with me. And she may be able to fill me in on how it is for her to share the space with me and my books. And then I can find out, okay, so I have listened empathically and got to understand that her needs are as much as mine. And so we can build that and put that together. So I hope that works. And that helps us show how we take those bare bones and work them into a conversation. And before I can have that conversation, I need to work with myself on deciding who am I going to be within a conflict. Who am I going to be means what kind of person am I? Who am I going to be? And I need to work with that so that I am able to then communicate in the way that I want to. Now we have another one that I think that we can all relate to this one. How do you communicate with someone who is determined to find something in what you say to attack you? I think we can relate to that. And after they have laid out some leading questions, as if drawing me in a trap, and I'm always caught, how do I communicate with this person? Do I cut off communication in a way that I just disappear from their orbit? When somebody is this difficult, way more difficult than my books being on the floor, we do have the choice of cutting off the communication. And it depends on how special that person is in your life, how important that person is in your life. If it's a person that you can actually get on without having to see again, you can cut off the communication. However, you will always have that discomfort in your mind about that person. Or it may be a person that you cannot cut off because you see them daily. So you do need to solve it. Then you need to work on it. And the way to work on it would be a similar process of speaking honestly from yourself, of taking a time when you are not in an anger situation with a person, taking a time when you are with that person and there's nothing else going on, and you can ask them, can I chat to you a bit or something, and ask them and prepare what you're going to say very carefully and share how it makes you feel when they do that. But it's coming from you. I feel distressed when you ask me questions and get angry with my answer. Okay, so that's actually throwing a bit of blame onto them. I am distressed because I feel attacked. Sorry, I'm getting it right here. I feel attacked when you ask me a question and get angry with or answer me in the way you do. Let the person know that you feel distressed by it. And what is the need that is not being met? So you look for what is missing. The person is talking with you, asking and answering questions. The fact is you are having a conversation. The need is, the feeling is, I feel attacked. the need is, I need to be able to answer the questions, or not have you ask me questions. Whatever the need is, I have a need for a peaceful conversation, basically. And then make a request of this person. Or maybe say to them emphatically, empathically, say to them that I see that you don't always like the answers that I give. Can we talk about it a little bit? In some way, you take the same giving honestly, but clearly with no emotion because you've worked on it, and then accepting whatever they say. We accept their emotion. And because the other side of it is that the other person also has a need. And if we can start feeling their need, and seeing what their need is, and maybe expressing what we see the need to be, then the conversation can start a little bit more. I see I'm looking at the time. I need to go a little bit quickly. We have another question that fits with that. How to be truthful without being hurtful? That's another very important one, but it depends again on what the circumstance is, because truth does not need to hurt. And if it's something that will hurt the people, we can go back to not giving sorrow to other people. So if it's something I need to say to them, I will do it in a way that doesn't give them sorrow. And it depends on how necessary the truth is there. Am I going to tell a lie instead? Then the truth is rather necessary than telling a lie. Or am I just don't need to tell the person that? So to be truthful means I speak from compassion. I speak from love. I speak from concern for the other person. I see what the other person's need is, in what I need to be truthful about, and try and approach it from that way. I don't know if that's being helpful in any way. We have another one here that's when people don't want to be communicated to, interesting word, don't want to be communicated to, when they don't want to listen, what do you do? Now, we usually communicated to means I'm talking just to you, which is what we often do with children. We communicate to children, and they don't always want to be communicated to or with. But yes, there are some people that don't want to join in our communication, and we need to honor that. If they don't want to communicate, we need to let them be and not communicate with them, or even ask them if there's something that has to be, communication has to be had for some reason. We can acknowledge, I can see you don't want to discuss this right now. Can you give me a time when you think we could discuss this? And if it's in a hurry, it needs to be discussed before Grandma comes to stay with us, or whatever it is, and give the other person space to not communicate. And the other person, if they're not wanting to communicate, it's probably because they don't like the response they get from me. So what I need to do there is to look at how I respond to that person. How empathic am I being in my response to that person? Am I seeing the need of that person? So I need to be more encouraging and loving in that way. What you are going to communicate depends on the person in front of you. You need to feel the pulse. Adjust what you are talking about. How do you feel the pulse? Yes. So how again, this bounces off that one, that the person who doesn't want to communicate. We need to feel the pulse of that person. They're not wanting to hear what we say. How do we know that? Because we communicate through vibrations, and we pick up the vibrations of that person that they don't want to communicate, or their body language. And so we pick up that, and sorry, I was looking at something on the screen and I lost my question. Yes, so to feel the pulse is to feel what emotions are vibrating from them, to see the look in their eye, to see what they are doing, and to see, is this what they want to hear? If it's not, can I do it some other way? Can I leave this out? Or can I have a conversation with them about what they would prefer? And it's finding out where they are, and then communicating with them in the place that they are in. And now, how to bring out the courage? How do I bring out the courage to communicate? It does take courage to communicate honestly about my feelings, because I make myself vulnerable. I am feeling this is what this feeling I am having. I am making myself vulnerable. But how I can do it is by spending time with myself, preparing carefully how I'm going to do it, and understanding that actually it's very effective to communicate my vulnerability, and it helps other people to communicate back to me. So just take the courage by your hand, own the stage, and say what you need to say, but compassionately, and being ready to listen to a compassionate response. And there's a question: is why do people not communicate? Because they are afraid of what the response might be. They of guilt, of anger in response, or of whatever the response may be. They're afraid of what the response may be. And what I haven't said, which is good to say now, is that meditation is one of the ways that we work, that I work with myself in preparing myself to communicate effectively. So it's a good thing to do a little meditation now. So if you just sit wherever you are in your home, relaxed and comfortable. Take a deep breath. And you've heard lots of words about communication right now. And each of you has your own particular question to do with communication. Think now of a specific instance of communication you would like to work with, or a person that you don't communicate well with. And hold yourself in a space of compassion, of love. And see the other person in your mind's eye, and hold that person in a position, in a space of love, of compassion. And just feel that space of compassion between you and the other person or the other people. Feel that space of compassion grow within your own heart. Even put your hand over your heart and feel compassion and tell yourself, I'm okay. I can be peaceful. I am loving. And reach out to embrace that other person within that same compassion. The other person is peaceful. The other person is loving. And together we can be compassionate. And we can sort out whatever the little hitch of communication is there. I have compassion for myself. I have compassion for everybody with whom I communicate. And I sit in this lovely circle, vibrating compassion to every soul who is in my vicinity. And I take a deep breath. And I come back to this space together.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Lisa. We've got a few more minutes, so I was hoping I could pitch these questions that have come in to you. The first one that came in quite early into your talk, well, part of your way through, how to deal with the situation where the other person hear, when you're speaking, they hear blame or criticism, even when it's not there.
If you look very carefully at the words that you are saying, it might be that they are framed in criticism or blame. But on the other hand, there's another little motto that I like to use for a situation like that, is that the other person is never reacting to you. The other person is reacting to something within themselves. And the same goes for me. I am never reacting to the other person. I am reacting to somebody, something inside of myself. So sometimes, yes, I hear blame when it hasn't been given because I'm blaming myself for that. Or I think that people blame something. So if they heard blame, they really did hear blame. And what you could say gently and with compassion is, I hear that you feel I am blaming you for such and such. Don't defend yourself. Don't go into, no, I'm not blaming from you. Just acknowledge that that is what you are picking up. I pick up that you are blaming me for whatever it is. And then stop and let them continue. And keep the conversation going, never defending yourself, but reflecting back to the other person, the distress, whatever kind of distress it is that they are feeling. And you will find that the conversation will open up and you may be able to resolve it. And it may be coming from a place that neither of you were aware of. So that's a good exercise to try.
Thank you. The next question is, what do you think is the best way of communicating in a very diversified work environment, i.e. in terms of background, culture, language usage, upbringing, educational levels, etc.?
That's like what I was saying at the beginning. through all of that, it's remarkable how we managed to do that. What I would actually say is, for you in that situation, I can't tell you in a short way how that would work, but carrying these bare bones of effective communication in the mutual receiving, giving and receiving with empathy from the heart is basically what you could use. But to be able to use it in this diverse situation, the study of the nonviolent communication book by Mitchell Rosenberg would be a very useful thing to do together with the people who need to do that. But you would need somebody who's an expert in the art of nonviolent communication. It is very excellent, and I would advise it to anybody in a group situation that have got so many differences going there. You would find, or even just get the book and study it for yourself or whatever works. There are lots of ways and of dealing with that kind of thing. But mostly it's giving with empathy and accepting, receiving with empathy, hearing what each other is saying and asking when you're not sure. In my culture, that means this, and that's a little insulting. What does it mean in your culture? Actually ask if something happens, because that's one of the ways, without blaming or thinking what I think is right, being willing to hear another side and to actually try another viewpoint. I don't know if that helps.
Thank you. And finally, a quick question. Could you repeat the name of the book and who the author is?
Okay. The name of the book is Nonviolent Communication.
Okay. Actually, there's a whole pile of other stuff that's coming. Sorry, I didn't notice. Can a person with a high level of communication and good emotional intelligence function in a relationship or a marriage with a person who has a low level of communication and emotional intelligence?
What an interesting question. I would say yes. It would take a lot of commitment on both sides to make it work. And the one with the high level would have to be very guiding in the situation and in working with the other person. And it would depend on how valuable the relationship is, and finding a way of being able to discuss things at the time without the one being superior to the other, because the low level one will have specialities of their own that they can both learn from. So it's finding places of meeting and being able to explain to each other and just making the most of what you have got and looking at each other's specialities and dwelling on specialities rather than looking at what's wrong in the situation.
Okay, thank you. Here's the last question, I think, that's come through. Oh, what do I do when I hear, what do I do when I hear that person's voice is giving me creeps? So I just can't stand it, but I need to communicate with that person. How do I manage that?
So again, you need to look and see what is it triggering inside you? What is the feeling that is coming up inside of you? And because you are reacting to that voice, it's something in you. You are not reacting to the voice. You are reacting to something in you that the voice triggers. So you need to know, what is it triggering in me? What is the feeling? What is the emotion that it is triggering in me, and how can I deal with that and take responsibility for the trigger, because the person can't change his or her voice. So it's taking the responsibility to look and see what is it triggering within me, and what can I possibly do to solve that emotion.
So the other question that's come up is, have you written any books on communication? Not yet, I think, is the answer. No. Just to round off, I'm going to say thank you so much, Lisa, for taking time out and sharing your thoughts and your wisdom with us, and being entertaining as well. So thank you for being so open with us. Thank you very much for joining us, and we hope to see you soon. Lisa, thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for having me and listening to me rattle on. Thank you.